Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Jeff, it's the most electrifying podcast in all of the wrestling category of Apple. In what country was it?
Ukraine, number three, my friend.
We're the number three. This is a total shoot. We are the number three wrestling podcast in all of Ukraine.
Finally, we have come back.
I love it. That just brought me so happy to see that. So for those of you listening, thank you for your support in Ukraine.
But Jeff, no matter where you are in the world, yep.
First of all, how the hell are you doing?
I'm feeling good after we realized our kind of worldwide, you know, the wrestling's worldwide. So it would make sense that we're worldwide. It was three in the Ukraine and seven in Austria. So to our friends that listen to us, you know, wherever you may be, like this
tell your friends, those listening in those two places, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your coworkers, so we can jet up to number one. We will keep a watchful eye on that here in 2021.
We did not talk resolutions last week. It's one, you know, if we have a little bit of time today, our wrestling resolutions, but that was off the air. I know that was mine. I'm shooting for number one in some of these countries like that. I don't see why we couldn't do it. We're not going anywhere. We've got tons of matches. And so, just exciting. There's no other way to look at it. Payoff is here to stay.
Well, that's a good goal. And then I'll throw out another goal. By the end of this year, I want us to be at over a 500,000 downloads.
The sky's the limit, you know?
And I think we can do it. So,
and I think I can speak for both of us that on both of our lists would be getting to a wrestling show.
Yes. Yes. We'll talk more about that during the match. I want to talk fans at the Rumble, fans at WrestleMania. Last housekeeping thing, Jeff, a little peek behind the curtain is over holiday break, we compiled one hell of a list of future matches. We made a list. I'll tell you, we made a list of over 100 matches we want to cover. So more or less we're covered for the next 2 years, unless other stuff pops in our mind. But here's what's fascinating. There's a lot of great matches out there that either I hadn't even thought to cover or are a little off the beaten path, but these aren't even like infamous matches. These are just like awesome matches to cover. So I don't know about you, but I looked at that list and I'm like, I am pumped for every one of these matches for way different reasons for the next couple of years.
Yeah. And that was one where I've got them in our spreadsheet. I'm still organizing because we wanted to go back and make sure that we had like matches we'd done and we don't want to double dip anywhere. And we have, it's a good problem to have where like we've done so many, we want to make sure we're not doing the same one again. But then two, like our Twitter again, @PayoffPod, we love that when you guys suggest matches to us. And so this week, especially we had, some people suggest Umaga and John Cena, which you and I talked about because we forgot about it, and sure enough it's on our docket coming up pretty quick here, and so we've got that one, and then a couple others just like somebody else suggested spoilers here, Cactus Jack and Triple H, and that's one too, could very well early February, that could be on our list too. So it's great to see that we're synced up with our fans right now, so that's always very exciting.
Well, why are we covering this one, Jeff?
Why are we covering this one?
I'll go.
Go.
I didn't know if you were saying that and really questioning yourself. So I thought I'd interject.
I was going to collect my thoughts, but you go for it. Yeah.
Jeff, I was at this show. This was here in Phoenix, Arizona. Great one. We had great seats. We were in a little like, how like for wrestling shows, you can go on StubHub and you can get seats in a private box. So we were in a private box. I knew most of the people in there, kind of front row, hanging over, directly facing the entrance. So sometimes it's nice to be a little bit more in the crowd, but at the same time, the views were great and it was awesome. So you know, you had The Rock coming back after, you know, the hiatus. He had done the referee thing. Then he had done the match. Now it's like he's, hey, I want to be champion. So this is a run for The Rock. This is a 3-match run, not even just an appearance. Punk's been the champion for over 500 days. There's a lot to talk about in terms of Punk's reign. And then obviously what would happen, you know, following this in terms of his exit from the company. A really good show overall, which I'll get into. But what about you, man?
Yeah, and this is one where, which for the fan, if you ever need help getting tickets or kind of some tips of getting wrestling tickets, talk to Tom.
I can write a book about getting tickets for wrestling shows, specifically WrestleMania, but really any of the big arena shows. So there's a huge difference between going to, you know, your local NBA arena or convention center or wherever versus going to the larger shows, specifically outdoor, because outdoor means infrastructure, which means a lot of shitty seats. So
you got to be aware of that. So this was one that was actually on my list, and I was looking through it because it was just on a list of best Royal Rumble matches ever, which makes sense because of there's just a lot that was happening. And so and this is one where we've talked about The Rock, we've talked about CM Punk before. This is one where it kind of lives up to the hype a little bit. And, you know, we're all about like the pay, you know, obviously called the payoff, where we talk about, you know, those kind of three parts and the build to this one, just, you know, we'll talk about it, but there was just a lot happening here that's worthy to be talked about.
There sure was. So with that said, let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So as I said, Phoenix, Arizona, Royal Rumble 2003. At the time, it was the U.S. Airways Center, 15,000. Hanging from the rafters, buy rate of 512,000. Man, it's a lot of people spending whatever $35-$40 for a pay-per-view during this time, but we're just before the network. So on this show, we start off with newly crowned world heavyweight champion over on SmackDown, Alberto Del Rio, defeating the Big Show. So they're trying to make him a baby face. They had a last man standing match. It was a really fun match, you know, all the normal plunder. Complete side note, Jeff, but how big of an asshole is this guy in real life?
Oh yeah.
I mean, there was just something else that popped up too. I mean, to the point where like, I don't even think I'd want to cover one of his matches. Cause he's just a really, really shitty person.
Yeah. It's what it seems like. Yeah. Terrible. One of the worst humans ever. Yeah.
And it's sometimes I feel like it makes it even worse when you're in the, like a public figure. Cause I'm like, everyone knows your shit. Like you understand that like for the past, I don't know, 7-8 years now, you've been disrespecting and physically abusing women. And it's out there on the internet and it's cost you money. It's cost you jobs and you still do it.
Yeah. Nonstop. Right.
Blows my mind. Right. So, all right. Then we go, tag team titles, Team Hell No, Daniel Bryan and Kane defeating, the Rhodes Scholars of Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow. You know, it's hard to believe that Cody Rhodes wanted to leave the company and, preferred to carve his own path than what they were feeding him. My God.
He's doing a 10-minute match getting like stomped. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
in a bullshit.
I think he did all right for himself. Yeah, he did all right for himself.
He made the right move. You know, it's funny. It's like, I'm trying to think of like who left that was determined to be a star that wasn't successful. Like you know, to me, like Cody and Drew McIntyre are the same guy, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so it's, if you just see, it's like, if it's the right person that wants to get themselves over, I'll tell you another, Jinder Mahal, you know, he left, got himself in better shape and came back. So, I mean, I'm sure there's guys that haven't been able to do that, but the ones that, you know, are determined, I mean, Brody Lee, I mean, he's like, you know, I'm just trying to think of guys that, you know, you liked and you felt were underutilized and were really good people behind the, you know, backstage and really had that drive. I mean, if you have it, but if you don't have it, and you're just kind of lazy, it's not going to work. So the way this card was set up, Then we get the Royal Rumble. 55 minutes, Cena defeating Ryback at the very end. You know, just too predictable. You knew Cena was going to win. Now it was cool that Jericho came out at the beginning. Jeff, you know, I've been to a lot of wrestling. The Jericho surprise at the beginning was one of the biggest pops I've ever, you know, witnessed in person. Place went insane. Big surprise. Nobody knew, but yeah, Cena winning it, blah. Obviously we're setting up Cena Rock, but it was just the whole booking of this was just so predictable. And why not give a SmackDown guy the rub, right? Why not give someone on another show the rub and you get to Cena Rock a different way? That would have been how I'd book this, right? I mean, think about Ryback winning it, right? I mean, I don't know, someone else he could have made a real star and gone for a real surprise. Gosh, I can't remember who the SmackDown title match was at WrestleMania that year. Obviously, we got Rock Cena. So I'm trying to think. I'm just like, well, why wouldn't you give that person the rub or have done something different? So, and then the main event, of course, Rock Cena. They're going to go 23 minutes. As you'll get into, Punk's been your champ for 500 plus days, long reign to this. Just a couple other, you know, side notes. Again, we're just coming up on this random SmackDown title switch of Big Show losing the title to Del Rio. They had come to an agreement that Bruno Sammartino would be in the Hall of Fame. That was big news, man. He was out of the company for a long time. And it just, you know, it's frustrating. I know these things are complicated, but it's just frustrating it took that long. I mean, we lost him, you know, a few years ago. And so we really didn't get him in the company doing the backstage interviews, maybe making some cameos, introducing him to another generation of fans, being on all those great documentaries. That sucks. And then you think about how Warrior, I mean, by a few days, we were able to get him back in the fold before he died. And Macho Man, we never got back in the fold. It just, it's so frustrating. And, you know, look, Vince McMahon, he's obviously a hard-headed guy, but fuck, why couldn't 5 years prior have he, you know, buried the hatchet with Macho Man, buried the hatchet with Warrior, gotten these guys back in the fold somehow, some way, had Triple H done it instead, whatever, just somehow been able to get these guys back. But we've lost guys that we missed out on some cool Hall of Fame moments, some cool cameos, maybe one more, you know, shaking the ropes, one more elbow drop, who knows. But it frustrates me when I go back and watch this stuff because we missed out on some good stuff. So that's all I got. Build wise, how do we get to these two?
Yeah, so this is one. So we got to go back. Of course, this Royal Rumble was 2013, but we're going to go back. It was July 23rd, 2012. Raw, it was actually Raw 1000 at that point. Punk defended the title against, it was the Money in the Bank winner, John Cena. And he actually lost by DQ after interference from the Big Show. So this night, though, it was big. You had like the special guest, of course, being The Rock. He had interrupted Punk earlier that he was going to wrestle for the WWE Championship at the Royal Rumble, which was, you know, at this point, 6 months away. You know, he had gotten involved with to save Cena from Big Show's assault. Punk attacked The Rock. And so by the end of the show, Punk had become a heel by attacking The Rock. And so, at that point, you would think that they knew exactly what the direction was going to go. We're in July and then, you know, we know Rumble. And so we have The Rock and then Mania. And so you'd hope that somewhere on some piece of paper, Vince had jotted down, like he knew what this was going to, you know, happen that far out, but who really knows? So Punk the next week kind of justified it that he was, and this kind of speaks to the kind of real world kind of promos that Punk would cut so many times, that he was sick of just kind of getting overshadowed by Cena and The Rock, and that, you know, it was, you know, he was should and was the champ, and that should be recognized for that. And so disrupting the number one contenders match between Cena and the Big Show as well, Punk was. And so what you had then at SummerSlam was the two of them, Cena, Big Show, Punk, taking on each other. You had him retaining the title. He actually pinned the Big Show. Punk and Cena submitted the Big Show at the same time. And so it's just a little bit of shenanigans and just how the match played out, but kind of interesting to watch it and things like that. But, had that. So you had also AJ Lee restarting that match. Like, that was one too we could put on our list when we get back around to SummerSlam, because it was an interesting one. So Night of Champions, though, you have Punk retaining after he fought Cena to a draw, actually. Punk, really, these two guys, you know, we're at September at this point, and the two of them really just kind of, Punk and Cena having a back and forth, but always kind of looming was that The Rock was going to be taking on the champion at Royal Rumble. And so again, this kind of playing into Ryback, it was supposed to be a Hell in the Cell match, Mick Foley and picking his opponent, things like that. It played out kind of weird, but no matter what here, Punk actually was, beating Ryback at that Hell in a Cell in October. It was actually from Brad Maddox helped this one. And so again, he's the heel. There's a lot of names that were involved is because it just wasn't clean. And that's how it should be a lot of times with the heel win of not winning clean. But Punk beating Ryback, that was actually a ending of a streak of Ryback. He had about 35, 40 matches where he was undefeated at this point. And so
he was hot then, and they hot-shotted him into that spot for a rating. Yep. And yep. I'm like, man, this is stupid because you know he's not going to win the title and it's just going to take steam off him. Is the Goldberg blueprint that complicated? You have a guy that does a couple cool offensive moves that looks like $1 million, in a wrestling, onesie or whatever the hell they call them. A singlet. I mean, like Ryback looks like $1 million. Just have him destroy people. Why can't you do that for 5 months? And then you give him the IC title. And then maybe you give him the world title. Maybe you don't. Maybe he sucks on promos. Maybe he hurts people. Maybe he gets hurt, right? But it's like, why is that so complicated? Like, this is where, having a hierarchy, used to serve them well, right? And it was really both promotions. There was nothing wrong with cruiserweights wrestling cruiserweights. Goldberg, for all the things WCW did wrong, he started off on the undercard. Then he won the U.S. title in an awesome match against Raven. Then he was world champ. And I think they could have waited another 3 or 6 months to give him that title. Savage was the Intercontinental Champion. Warrior was the Intercontinental Champion. Bret Hart was the Intercontinental Champion. So why have we gotten away from that formula where we have to co-mingle everyone immediately? And it just, what it does is it, one of two things, either you're trying to jam someone down my throat, no thank you, or you're taking the steam off guys when, we can't give this guy the title right away. So allow it to breathe. I mean, you could have had a nice year-long run with Ryback. I mean, that was one of the worst booking that they've done because they had something with him. They really did, and they totally screwed it up. And he's a cool guy behind the scenes too. Like, he studies stuff. He worked on his promos. Like, seems like a hard-headed but good guy. It's like, you have someone like that, dude, just slow and steady. Keep him away from the main event.
The Feed Me More was a good chant. Like, I was always a fan of that one. And then the and this is one, I don't know if you listened to Eric Bischoff on a podcast recently, it talked about this and how, like, we'll talk about it during the match because it's a good topic to keep talking about. So now we're at Survivor Series, though. Punk was actually supposed to captain a team. He was replaced with Dolph Ziggler. And then again, this kind of pushed John Cena, Ryback, CM Punk. They had a triple threat match, which Punk won that one. And so this is where, though, you had the debut of the Shield. It doesn't feel like that long ago, but 2013 or 2012, November, that Survivor Series, really interfering with that, allowing Punk to retain. And at this point, he had held the belt for about a year. And so, you had that. And so, he was supposed to have a match, TLC against Ryback, which again, pushing Ryback, we're doing this, but had to have surgery. So he was pulled from that one. And so now, despite that, at this point, Punk then became the longest reigning WWE champ really in the past 25 years. It was December 5th. It was 381 days. He beat John Cena's 380 day. This would continue, though, but because we know that, when he lost the belt and things like that. But coming back at Raw, he had his rematch, but his makeup match with Ryback for the TLC match. And again, interference from the Shield. And so having to deal with that, and that plays into the stipulation on this match. And so just kind of be aware. So, Now we're going to that, you know, so we're in January now with that match. Now we got to rewind a little bit here and go back into really, we're in 2013 at this point, but going back to 2011 and The Rock revealing that he was going to host, it was WrestleMania 27 at this point. It was the first point that he had been on TV in over 5 years, actually 7 years. He cut a long promo. We've talked about this before. Ended up starting a feud with John Cena. All kinds of different things happening. But again, we're getting to the point then where, you know, a lot happened between that time, too much to talk about on this episode, but we get to the point with it's the Raw 1000 and him announcing that he was going to take on the WWE champ. Now you also had other guys expressing interest in taking on CM Punk as well too, of like Daniel Bryan, John Cena. They all not just take on CM Punk, but take on The Rock as well too, because he was back. You had him, it really then, like we said, we kind of laid out the timeline for how like CM Punk got to January. The Rock, not a whole lot in between there, you know, some satellite appearances, things like that. But then get into that January 2013 to bring the timelines together here. You had The Rock, he confronting his, you know, confronting CM Punk in early January, then him appearing on SmackDown. Again, he got into it with the Rhodes Scholars, giving the Rock Bottom, the people's elbow to Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes. There was actually the 20th anniversary episode of Raw. This is one where it was the Rock concerts, which led to a brawl with CM Punk. And then really you had The Rock being attacked by the Shield the following week. And so this is where then Vince McMahon said that if the Shield attacked The Rock in his match with CM Punk, Punk would be stripped of the title. And so because you had all these matches over the last really couple of months where the Shield had been getting involved and I say kind of helping him. Now The Rock cut a promo. This is like one of the quotes was actually from the Wrestling Observer newsletter. They said The Rock did a tremendous interview. It was an early 80s Dusty Rhodes interview where he talked about wanting to be a pro football player and not getting drafted by the NFL. He talked about being 24 years old and only having $7 to his name, which I didn't even realize this. That's the name of his production company, which is $7 Entertainment. And so
yep, that's where it came from.
I had totally forgotten about that. And so until I kind of read that. And so, but he talked about his mom, who is actually, she's going to be ringside for this match, which we may not, I'm sure it'll cut to her, but I know when I was kind of finding the match, I saw they were kind of showed her real quick, but she's at this one as well too. And so, had cancer, didn't quit. And that he vowed at this point, he was going to end the 434 days of misery. And it would be proof that everybody counts. So you have The Rock coming in as the face on this one. You have Punk being just the heel, that role, just played it very well and had been that role for a while, but then also being the champ for a very long time. And so, it kind of has all the trimmings and of, being something great here, but, kind of made sense, just kind of how it played out and where we got here. So, Tom, thoughts on all of it?
I got a lot of thoughts. I'm going to save them for the match, but I love all the moving pieces to this. I love the Punk title reign. I got no issue with The Rock coming back at all. I thought it was extremely well done. Every promo he did during this run was must see TV. I got a lot more to cover, but let's get into the match.
Let's do it.
So for those that want to watch with us, 2 hours and 16 minute mark, we're at Royal Rumble 2013. Again, 2 hours, 16 minute mark, Royal Rumble 2013. Jeff, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Oh, it's time for the payoff.
All right, here we go. Announcers hyping it. They're ready to go.
Spinner.
What do you hate the spinner belt?
Yeah,
right?
I'm not a fan of the spinner belt. It made sense for John Cena, but it just doesn't make sense otherwise. All right, so
terrible.
So let's jump right in here. Obviously, we got the match. We're about to ring the bell and get into it. Your buddy Mike Chioda there. So I was looking through because you had made a comment actually in the start of the show about like pay-per-view buys and who was spending the money on this. I found a list. It's not as up to date, but it was like the early 90s through 2015 and what every pay-per-view cost. And so it's actually, and it's very interesting to watch here. So on like the 00 in the 10, like, so 2000, 2010 is when they hiked the price. And so it was every 10 years because the Royal Rumble in 2001 was $29.95. Okay. Yeah, $29.95. But then by it's pretty much that WrestleMania. So then WrestleMania X7, it jumped to $39.95. And all the pay-per-views after that were a little bit more. So then you got to go all the way to 2010, where you see kind of the next jump, where it jumped from $39.95 to $44.95. Now, you would ask.
I didn't realize they got that high.
And so that was 2000. So the WrestleMania, it would have been 37. No, that's not right. 27. The 2012 Mania. Yeah, there's an extra X.
Yeah, that was Atlanta.
That was $54.
Jeez. And then it's cheaper to just go to the damn thing.
Right. And so, and it had been up until, let's see here. Yep. 2000. Again, it was $44.95. Now this show, Royal Rumble 2013, in order to pay for or get it on pay-per-views, you were looking at $44.95. And then it jumped. It has since jumped again. I believe they're pretty much $49.95 at this point. I haven't bought one recently because not about to, don't need to.
And I'm assuming they're charging them and AEW probably charging the same now.
Yeah, it's a, yeah, because I bought one of the AEW ones. I forget what it was. Yeah. But, yes, but it's interesting to just see the inflation that taking that kind of time. So now I got Heyman. This is something we did not cover, in my kind of build on this one. Heyman is associated with CM Punk at this point. And okay, so you've actually got Heyman ringside, and actually Heyman kind of attacking, the Rock at this point to distract, and then Punk, getting the upper hand. So he teased the Spanish announce table. We want to take bets here. Are we going to have the Spanish announce table by the end of this match?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
How good is Punk in the ring?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I loved about his whole title reign is just every match was great. You know who it reminds me of? I think Drew McIntyre. I think every big match he has been really good this year. You know, I mean, I thought it was stupid he lost Orton. I would have kept the title on him, but whatever. But I mean, he's had a lot of great matches, man.
Yeah, and you've seen him, you and I both saw him on those kind of year-end lists of just kind of how well he was doing. He was, if not at the top, close to the top. So, and we've got a list that you and I are going to talk about, the Sports Illustrated list in a minute here. He's number 3 on their list. And I don't know if I think WWE put some, I forget if it was matches or individual lists, but I know he was 1 or 2 on some of those as well.
Go ahead.
I already went. All right. So speaking to your, I had said Eric Bischoff recently commented on, like you said, like why some of these belts and kind of things we're just not seeing, you know, it just doesn't feel like there's any build or there's a whole lot happening. He actually it pretty much boiled down to like the kind of stakes, like there's just the stakes aren't there like you would hope for. So he actually praised, and I've always been a fan of it too, the standings that AEW has. Like every week they kind of update their standings, so you kind of know what's happening. And as he said, it provides opportunity for conflict right off the bat. Even if there's nothing going on today with regards to conflict as a result of the standings, the potential is there. When you call back to it and you need it, it's right there. You're not making it up all at once. The stuff is not popping up out of nowhere. You don't have to use it all the time, but when you need it, it's there. And the audience already understand it. They've already been exposed to it. And now all you need to do is create the conflict that can be born out of it. So speaking to your kind of like Ryback and just kind of like, you know, what they could have done there. Like, what are your thoughts on, do you like, I like the standings. Like, is that one way to fix it? Is there a better way to fix it? What are your thoughts?
I like the idea of standings. I like the idea of anything that tries to legitimize it. I think in terms of stakes, the two issues you have, one has been around for a long time, which is we just flip flop these titles too often. The more recent one though there's just too much going on, man. I mean, what are we looking at in terms of titles? We got two world titles. We got a U.S. and Intercontinental. We got two women's titles. We got tag team women's
titles. Multiple tag titles.
Okay. Yeah. You got two tag titles. You got this 24/7 bullshit. I mean, is there a 205 Live championship? Yes. Okay. There's then you have NXT, yeah. NXT North America, NXT UK, NXT women, NXT tag. It's just, it's too much. So none of this stuff means anything. So it's like, oh, everyone's just carrying around a prop. You either have the prop or you don't have the prop. I mean, there's nothing magical about, and you can't even keep track of who, you know, has been champion before. And it's just, again, I think, you know, with the two brands, look, when the two brands were doing separate pay-per-views, I get the idea of your champions moving around. I'd argue now, Jeff, I'm curious what you think of this. I hadn't really given much thought to it, but why now not just say, look, all right, Raw and SmackDown have two different rosters. Anytime you're champion, you can and will defend on both shows. And so you have a world title that, you know, that champion can show up on both shows, the Intercontinental champion, your tag champions, your woman champion, your women's tag champion. Okay. So now there's five titles. They're moving around on the two shows. I can live with that. And the two shows still have separate rosters. That's fine. There is no point to the duplication of titles now. There's none. The only time you could ever justify it is when you were doing split brand pay-per-views and you just needed to have a title match on every show. Now it's pointless.
Well, and he actually got into that of like, he asked specifically why anyone would want to be a world champion today. He said, why do people fight for that? What is the really a goal? In boxing, winning a world heavyweight championship means you won the biggest purse. It was about the money. We've lost that. What does it really mean to be champion? Becoming a world champion, what does it really mean for an honest, relatable way to the audience? All it means is that you're going to be in the main event a lot. There's nothing that the average person that can relate to stakes. They're non-existent. In this case, the champion is nothing but a prop. It's something to hold on to while you're telling a story, but it's not relatable to the audience. So I think that's pretty much what you said. Like, it's, you know, the prop of it. I think too, because you and I have talked about when we watch some of these old matches, like what the Intercontinental Championship used to mean. Like, ooh, it was like getting that younger guy, like, kind of to the next level. Like, we just, you knew what the Intercontinental belt and every once in a while, you know, when somebody wins, they're like, oh, bring prestige back to it. Like that is a long storytelling kind of avenue that you could run with, but then they don't bring any actual prestige back to it. Like, I think like the US title, like the open kind of, you know, open challenge that they were doing with that was one of the best things ever. Like, okay, if like make that US title, that's what it's about. Like, you have to, like, it is an open challenge. You have to defend it when called upon, and that kind of, you can get guys from different brands. You can get, bring back a legend, like Tatanka, we had him on the show as a guest. Like, he showed up on the Legends night not too long ago and he looked good.
Dude, I love that idea of, because like, you know, the U.S. Open golf tournament, right? One of the cool things about it is any Joe off the street could qualify. And there's a bunch of qualifying tournaments throughout the country. But the whole idea is that it really is open to any golfer in the United States. It's the same thing where why not make, you know, or even the U.S. I mean, so maybe you had the Intercontinental title and you had the U.S. title, but the U.S. title, maybe it made its way on NXT too. And it was just, you never know when the U.S. champion is going to show up. And when they show up, it's an open invitational. Hell, you could make that so that there never actually was a U.S. Open title match announced, right? There was never, it was always an invitational.
Yeah.
So, hey, CM Punk, I'm showing up on Sunday. I'm putting the title up for line. I'd love to see you be the one to challenge me. So you kind of know it's going to be that, but it's open to anyone. I mean, what a cool idea that would be. But again, they got to get rid of some of these titles. So,
and look at, Charlotte Flair did it. Like, she defended the NXT title all over the place. Now, there's debate about whether she should have had it or not. I'm sure part of it was to pop the rating, and Charlotte Flair is Charlotte Flair. But at the same time, like, it worked, and you never knew where she was going to show up. And, you know, because she could, you know, somebody from NXT could come over, and that, like, how, like, that's how you could build some of those stars, is all of a sudden one of them shows up in the arena on a Monday night. You're making a name for them now. So yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, we don't armchair book, but that's one where it's one of those, why wouldn't you do something like that? Like, because it works, it's demonstrated to work when you kind of provide those opportunities to your, I say to the wrestlers. Yeah.
Rock looks good in the ring. I mean, he hasn't skipped a beat. I mean, you know, remember, he was never the best worker. So, I mean, to me, he looks the same as he's always looked in his career. I don't think he looks better, worse, anything. Probably physically looks better, but, you know, I mean, he seems to be doing quite well.
No, and they're both, I say, they're not working stiff necessarily, but they are kind of Punk going for GTS right now. He's got Rock up over his shoulders and Rock catching it. Yeah, and so, yeah, absolutely. I think, and this was, at least at this point in 2003, I think Rock, he definitely looked better than, I guess he was still in wrestling form. Not to say he's not now, but not too far removed at this point. Now, this was also, I say, he was right in the middle of his, I mean, he had put out some good movies at this point. We're in 2003, he had already done the Fast and Furious movies. You know, that was kind of his big claim to fame at this one. But 2003, I'm kind of looking at his filmography because I was curious. He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies come out in 2003. And one of them being Fast and Furious 6. And so he was, at least in regards to being like a movie, like he was doing double duty
at
this
point. He was a made man at this point too.
Yeah.
So we have no fans for the Royal Rumble. And you and I were talking about this week. I have no idea why. I just don't get it. You know, you have fans going to football games. So what's the difference? You know, I mean, even if, you know, would it be cool even if you said, hey, the Rumble and WrestleMania will both be at Raymond James Stadium. You know, we're going to do both of them. We're going to let 10, 20,000 fans in, you know, no different than all these other football stadiums around the country have done. So I have no idea what the issue is for that. We both agree Royal Rumble's probably going to be awkward, if not just completely suck without fans. It's probably a show more than others that really needs fans, right? Fans just, I mean, you think about Drew McIntyre knocking out Brock Lesnar and the fan reaction and Edge coming back. I mean, it's just such a fan dependent, you know, the countdown and the surprises and all that stuff. So not that you can't be shocked at home if someone surprising comes out, but gosh, it's just not the same. So they got to figure out a way to get fans, certainly for WrestleMania, but I just don't know why they didn't try to do, hey, we're going to do the Rumble in Miami and we're going to do WrestleMania in Tampa or something. And you could sell 20,000 tickets immediately. You know, these buildings can handle crowds that size because they're doing it. So I haven't seen anything that makes me, you know, understand it. So really curious. You'd think if anything, Vince the Trailblazer would go, fuck it, we're having 30,000 fans there. We're gonna have more fans than the NFL had, you know. We're gonna be the first thing in North America back in person. You know, I'm surprised.
Well, and so I'm looking at it. Tropicana Field, it says the capacity is 42,000. You figure that's for baseball, though. And so you probably wouldn't put anybody on the floor. I mean, you could. I don't see why not. But even if you said, okay, like we'll let 5,000 fans in, it's still something. And I get, like, you know, yes, the coronavirus is still happening. And, you know, in Florida, especially, you know, it's rough down there as well. But I think doing it safe, like even the NFL, which is going to be down there, is talking about letting, my buddy, who's actually a healthcare worker down there, he's in a pool, his company, to potentially get tickets to go to the Super Bowl. So, like, if you can do the Super Bowl and do it safe, especially like you said, Vince on the front end, like he wants fans bad. Like, it doesn't make a ton of sense why it's something. And my worry, as I said just off the air before we started recording, was like, are they gonna do? You know, Vince never has liked the countdown from the fans. Is he not gonna have the countdown piped in? Like, it's just, yeah, it's gonna look weird. So, We're teasing the Spanish announce table now. You've got the kind of protector, if you will, to kind of hide the monitors pulled off of it. You got Punk up on it. He's pulling Rock up onto it as well, too, now. We'll see if you're like it, calling it out. He's kind of setting it up. We'll see what happens here. Punk gesturing. You're going to do go to sleep on him.
Oh! Table broke before he could hit the Rock Bottom.
And so the botch here. Just,
it's funny how sometimes this thing doesn't break and then other times. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the table just broke.
The table, yep, just giving out underneath, which rare to see. But the Spanish announce table kind of unceremoniously. I've seen
like it break on Triple H like mid pedigree, but that thing just before they could ever get off the ground. Wow.
Yeah. And so there too, or the table not breaking is more common than it breaking like that. And so Rock rolling back into the ring to kind of stop the count out.
I love how count outs don't matter unless they matter, right? Like, I mean.
Right. Yeah. And that's the nice thing. Like New Japan does it, like, you know, he does the Rock Bottom on the outside of the ring now at this point on, you know, outside onto the mat, just so that he can get the move off. So they made up for it, but it definitely was not the same. That's like with the timer, like it speaks like what Bischoff's saying, like the stakes, like, you know, AEW does it, New Japan does it, like 20 minute time limit, like, and we're going to do this, you know, it's just one of those things where WWE doesn't do and hasn't in a long time. But yeah, like you said, it matters when it matters until it doesn't matter. Right? So we've got here too, we had talked a little bit about the kind of how the end of 2020 played out for wrestlers. And there's a lot of kind of year end lists of, you know, who was the top, like who was number one, things like that. This was, and I'm sure we could find a different list and on for our next episode kind of talk about, but this is Sports Illustrated list, and kind of who they gave. And so I know you and I have both looked this over, but we haven't talked about it in depth because we didn't really want to. And so they gave their number one spot actually to Sasha Banks. And so John Moxley getting number two, and then Drew McIntyre getting three. They cited that it was her Great American Bash versus Io Shirai, her Extreme Rules versus Asuka, and then her Hell in a Cell versus Bayley was kind of, and they, oddly enough, they called her an emerging like star, which no, you know, but she kind of worked all the brands, kind of had that with that. I know Moxley had some kind of couple crazy matches as well too, both in New Japan and kind of here. And then Drew just kind of having his year. So what, you know, we talked a little bit about Drew, but agree, disagree. Like, you know, do you think who was like your top wrestler of the year last year? What are you thinking here?
You know, and again, I think in terms of WWE, Drew McIntyre was my MVP. I think he's done the best he could, all things considered. If he hadn't gotten hurt, man, I would have wanted to give some kind of an award to Edge for sure, just because his comeback and how cool it was is definitely something that I'd put up there as well. Maybe not wrestler of the year, but certainly, you know, comeback of the year and some great moments. What about you?
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because looking at this, just to go through the whole thing, you got Drew McIntyre 3, Naito number 4 out of New Japan, Kenny Omega 5, Bayley 6, Io Shirai 7, Kota Ibushi 8, who just had a big day or big 2 days at Wrestle Kingdom, Roman Reigns is 9, and Eddie Kingston is 10. And so you've actually got, in the match here, we got Lights Out. We'll come back to this. Again,
Rock,
playing
Rock
into the
stick. Rock was hitting
people's elbow. And so you got to remember too, like playing the stipulation up of the Shield being involved. This is one where, you know, if the Shield got involved, the Punk would lose the belt. And so Lights are out at this point. We don't know what's happening. The camera, we got Kevin Dunn, quick cuts in the dark and like in the camera all over the place. But things happening. So, and as we come back, lights on, The Rock is now through the announce table. The Michael Cole announce table. So Spanish table failed, but now we've got Rock through the other table and the fans, everybody on their feet trying to figure out what happened here as Punk's still laid out. So But anyway, so you've actually got three women above Roman Reigns on this list, which I think is interesting because I think the stuff they're doing with Roman right now is actually, it's pretty good. I think they're doing a good job of kind of playing that up, but I think it's interesting too. And you know, people shit on it all the time for whatever reason, but the women put together a nice, you know, the tag titles are a mess, but a lot of women sitting high on this one, which is kind of cool to see. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah, I think Drew, it's hard to not like Drew and kind of put him at the top of kind of what's happened this last year. I think he really, nobody could have predicted last year and how it all played out, but it kind of sucks that this is how his title reign is. And so
obviously the Shield were the ones that did the attack. And, you know, it's always cool to remember that that was CM Punk's idea originally, not Reigns, but Chris Hero was going to be the third guy. But yep. I mean, what a great idea. And gosh, if anything, they broke him up too soon. And, you know, we never, I'll tell you one thing we never got was that WrestleMania main event of the three of them.
Yeah.
And I think they would have just tore down the house.
Well, and the comeback of, like, you know, having Angle, you know, at the very end there, be a part of them and things like that. And so, yeah. So you got CM Punk going for the cover now. 1, 2, 3. There you go.
So CM Punk is your winner. Celebrating Heyman in the ring.
Celebrating, yep. Cult of Personality playing. One of the best licensed theme songs ever.
Maybe the best. I mean, it was so good.
Yeah.
I remember when they first used it when he came back after you know, he had walked away with the title, and then they played it, and then he comes out, and oh, just great stuff. Rock's mom disappointed in the crowd there. As you can probably imagine, The Rock popped a massive TV rating for his return during this. So his initial three appearances, two on Raw, one on SmackDown, just big time ratings, way higher than it had been by, you know, a pretty sizable percentage. And, you know, it just goes to show you that it, you know, as much as they want to build the WWE brand and Raw and SmackDown, no different than the NFL wants to build the Shield, right? The NFL logo. The reality is that these entities and entertainment are star driven. And so, you know, The Rock and Steve Austin were stars. That's why the Attitude was the Attitude Era, because of the stars. Okay. Yep. And I think sometimes we forget that. And, you know, I focus on build stars, man. People tune into Kansas City to watch Patrick Mahomes more than they do to watch just, oh, that Kansas City football team. So right. Now Vince McMahon's out, and I don't. What's going on?
You and I talking through this one, kind of wondering what's going on. Yeah, we've kept talking, and now Vince is out.
Vince is a baby face. All right, so he's saying we're going to
strip you. Yep.
Of the strip champion. You. Yeah. Easy for me to say, strip you of the championship.
Because obviously he's, you know, the lights went out. It was obviously the Shield.
It was obvious to me. I saw it. I could see, you know, they didn't have that many lights out when you were in
person. I mean, the Undertaker, the Undertaker didn't come out. You know, who else could it have been? And so now you got Heyman pleading down on his knees. They're both Punk and him are in the ring. So now you got Rock man. While he, you know, got pinned, he has managed to find himself a mic though. And now Rock cutting part of a promo as well.
And he's just going to say, look, we're going to settle this in the ring. I don't want the title that way. So we're going to restart this match. But man, it's just, you know, I think they've, you know, I feel like they have over the years, aside from maybe John Cena, they've just not tried to be reliant on individual talents, right? And they've tried so hard to build the brand and, you know, what we love to call 50-50 booking, where no one ever looks super strong or super weak. We just kind of keep everyone in the middle. Well, I think what that does is it creates less stars. You know, and when we're trying to script these guys instead of let their personality organically happen, it hurts as well. You know, but you look at a guy like Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt should be, if not the biggest, one of the biggest stars in wrestling right now. How they've managed to screw that up. I mean, is this Fiend even going to continue? Like, is he just a mid-card guy now? Like, how do you screw that up? Again, you put it, title on him for no reason. Then you take it off him. The Alexa Bliss. I mean, it's just, you know, it just, they ruin these things. All right. So match is back on. Rock is reeling. Punk
restarted it. Yep. Fans losing their mind on the restart. Yep.
Oh yeah. Everyone's up. I mean, I'm telling you, it was a hot crowd for Phoenix, because it's not Detroit or Chicago or New York City. It was a hot crowd all night. And I mean, people are just on their feet. Punk here, I guess he's going for the elbow drop. One of the better elbow drops in the business. Always liked his.
Is this a multi-purpose arena? Well, who plays here? Or what's the...
Just the Suns.
Got it.
So the Coyotes in the NHL play in a different arena, although they did play in this arena at one point. They've done arena football here. They obviously did ice hockey at one point. Yeah, this is where every once in a while they'll do a wrestling show at another one, but this is primarily where they are. The Hall of Fame, the year we had WrestleMania, the Hall of Fame was in a smaller venue because Ted DiBiase was the headliner. It was a really weak class, so they did it in a much smaller venue, and that was before NXT, obviously.
And that was a Punk again motioning for the GTS and go to sleep and kind of seeing what happens here.
Okay.
Got him up.
Rock reverses.
Rock fighting out.
See, okay, this is where you're going to hear me be really pissed off here in a second. So he hits him with the spine buster. He hits the people's elbow. And now we have just ended a 500-day title reign. Place going nuts, okay?
Losing their mind. Everybody's on their feet.
Losing their mind. They got what they wanted. But we just ended a 500-day title reign by an actor who reversed a move, hit a spine buster, and hit an elbow drop for the win. No rock bottom, no false finish. That's how you end it. So, you know, if I'm CM Punk, I'm pissed off too. You know, everybody wants to act like he has a bad attitude. I mean, that's how they end the reign was this. And again, place going nuts, but man, why not have him kick out of that? Then he, you know, hits the rock bottom or kick out of the first rock bottom. I mean, they just end it like that. It's like, okay. So, all right, we'll get more into it though. Let's jump into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right, dude, initial thoughts?
The ending just kind of, you know, yeah, we'll talk about the ending a little bit more, but overall it was a pretty good match. There was, I would say there was not a whole lot of downtime. You look at the kind of botched table spot, but for the most part, it was a good match. Like not slow, not a whole lot of rest holds. It was good stuff to me.
Look, I'll give you the positives real quick. Place is going nuts, and a guy that we thought would never wrestle again and happened to be the biggest star in Hollywood's now your champion, which I think it's always cool to see guys like that with the title. So, all right, let's get into aftermath and what the sheet said.
Yeah, and so like we said, kind of we talked about the table breaking and the lights out. We kind of talked through all that, so we don't need to readdress that. But it, Vince coming out, reminding Punk that if the Shield interfered, which, you know, Vince saying like, yeah, obviously that's what happened, he would strip him of the title. But, you know, Rock said that he wanted to take the title for Punk and told him to restart the match instead. And so that led to Vince restarting the match. And of course, you had the spinebuster, people's elbow, winning the champ. And so this for him, it was the eighth time, and it was ended Punk's reign. It was 434 days. So you had that, and moving forward kind of after this, you had Punk, like, of course, not happy. It got his rematch clause at Elimination Chamber, but The Rock defeated him and retained the championship. You then had Punk challenging Cena for his, like, the number one contendership, which Cena accepted and then beat Punk as well, too. So then you get into the Punk taking on The Undertaker at WrestleMania and trying to end his streak. And kind of having that. And so, of course, we know the streak that was not made to be ended on that day. And so what he did is being the heel and who he was, he wanted to take something away from the fans. That was his biggest thing. And so he beat the Big Show, Randy Orton, and Sheamus and it was a Final Four match to earn the right to face The Undertaker. But and then kind of a, you know, you can you play it up how you want and kind of, you know, whether you like it, where, you know, we've got, it doesn't always play well, but this was after the death of Paul Bearer, who of course Undertaker's, I say, former manager, and kind of, you know, being such a huge part of who the Undertaker was. It was the, you know, disrespecting Paul Bearer, stealing Paul Bearer's urn, you know, just kind of playing up that angle, whether you agree with it or not. But that, you know, Undertaker, what we know about the Undertaker now, he definitely signed off on it. So that's what it was. But WrestleMania 29, Punk defeated by the Undertaker, who then took back the urn as well, too. So,
you know how, and then, you know how the Undertaker got the urn in the first place, right?
Huh? I do not.
The old fashioned way. He earned it.
Whoa. Okay. That's an old, you know what?
That's an old.
I wasn't prepared for that. It's been a while, and so I wasn't prepared. I thought you were going to give us a real story, and then nope, you did not. So
that's an old Bobby Heenan line. God rest exactly. his soul.
So you also have, we talked about at the beginning here, the spinner belt, putting on, we get a new belt the following night with The Rock. It actually, it's now the kind of side plate belt, which we're kind of all accustomed to. And we see the videos on YouTube of them swapping out plates. You know, you got to feel, you know, they don't have plates made for every superstar. And so you got to feel bad for some of those people, but, you know, kind of having that. And then, The Rock then, you know, the two of them going, him and John Cena, who he had actually won that year's Royal Rumble, you know, which was the same, you know, as this, kind of setting up a rematch of their previous WrestleMania match at WrestleMania. So they just, you know, Rock ended up losing the belt to John Cena. He actually ended his reign in 70 days. And so just kind of how that played out. So, you know, and Rock was hurt during that one. So he was supposed to be at the Raw the following night and wasn't. And so kind of had that. But, you know, it was good stuff. You know, it kind of made sense of, like, you know, who Punk took on after that, made sense of, you know, rekindling the John Cena Rock, you know, it gave him a short run, which I, you know, I don't have a problem with that, which I think it made sense. And so, Tom, thoughts on the aftermath?
You know, I liked it. I just, God, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you use a different title. You use the SmackDown title as opposed to the Raw title for this. I think the part of this I don't like is you used Punk to get to Rock Cena. Why not use Del Rio or Big Show or someone else? I just, somehow they should have done differently with the title.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, I say tough to say. So, so where are we at here? Kind of the reviews, the write-ups, kind of what happened, things like that. So you had CM Punk, PWI. He was number two in 2013. This was obviously at the start of the year. So he had a lot that happened after that, obviously. And then The Rock has just kind of coming back and not, you know, being there for all the year, unranked actually that year, 2013. So, so what do you got from the PW Torch, Wade Keller and all the guys? This was a good show. The Rock versus CM Punk finish didn't bother me at all, but the quality of the match was a notch below where you'd like to see it. I think it was a combination of ring rust for Rock and their decision to just hold back just a little so they can top themselves and leave something for a rematch, which didn't happen a little bit. But the reason the finish didn't bug me at all is that it made good storyline sense. I also think WWE was a little sinister. They knew Punk fans badly wanted him to go against conventional wisdom and retain the title. However, I think without much doubt, it amplified the outrage the Punk fans felt at him losing the title. I, like many, thought Rock should have finished Punk with a rock bottom and not just a people's elbow. That's probably my second biggest complaint of the entire card. There's going to be some debate over whether WWE should have had Rock beat CM Punk without any shenanigans. The point of that was to have Rock refuse to have the title handed to him by Vince McMahon and ask for a restart so that he could win the title himself. And that was important. WWE has a real problem demonstrating the difference between the good guys and the bad guys. Having JBL act like a schizophrenic on commentary certainly hasn't helped. Somebody needs to be the hero in the situation, and The Rock took matters into his own hands. As for the wrestling aspect, The Rock has the physical strength and has 2 months to get into cardio shape for his rematch with John Cena. He should be fine. Which, and so he gave this one, it was 3.25 stars.
Okay.
And then getting into the Observer newsletter, they gave it 4 stars. And the finish was because the program was built on Punk saying that people don't matter and Rock saying they do, and thus the people's elbow was used. The idea is that Rock, that's a stretch. The Rock is the idea is that Rock will be doing a ton of media with several different movies coming out over the next 2 months and can talk about being WWE champion. The idea is to get the belt talked about in front of different people. Plus, there is far more mainstream talk about the championship with him holding it. At one point, the plan was for Cena versus Rock last year to be a title match, but that decision was instead that Rock versus Cena didn't need the title. So it was kept on Punk for this match with or for his match with Chris Jericho, but with which happened previously, but with his comeback being last year, the story this year was him getting the championship and defending it. So you got four from the Observer newsletter. You've got 3¼ from the PW Torch. Tom, I'll let you go first.
Let me just summarize. So love The Rock coming back. Place went nuts. I thought he looked as good as he used to look in the ring, maybe a little gasp, but who cares? Sometimes some of this stuff Meltzer says about like a guy's physique or, you know, how exhausted he looked in the ring. It's just so nerdy. Like who cares? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's pro wrestling. I'm not sitting there going, oh, well, this lineman's kind of breathing heavily. Oh, he looks gassed. Oh, well, this guy's, you know, six pack. Like, dude, shut up. And then some of the stuff he said about women in the past is just fucking disgusting. Okay. And I'm not, you know, I mean, it's so just over the top. It's just so smug and I can't stand it. So, again, I thought the finish was weak in the sense of, God, a false finish and then a rock bottom. Hey, it just adds another layer. It's so easy to do. I would have preferred that Punk wasn't the one to lose his title, but someone else was to end his reign. And I would have done that at WrestleMania and made it a bigger moment for someone else. I would have used the other title for this feud. The match was solid, if not spectacular, it was really solid. So there's some pros and cons in this, but overall, love The Rock coming back. I got this thing at like a 7.5 because the guy coming back, winning the title, being your champion after everything is really cool. It's not a, you know, 9 or 10, one of the biggest moments in the history of wrestling or anything like out of this world, but it's really, really solid stuff. So a really, really solid 7.5. And if anything, I'd argue maybe even closer to an 8. So 7.5 for me. What do you have, Jeff?
I actually had it at an 8. I think that you had, especially when you take not like the match itself, like I thought was actually just fine. Yeah, I'm with you. And I always think back to like when we interviewed Brian Pillman Jr. for, you know, talking about one of his dad's matches that he would talk about like getting ready for like the stamina and kind of how he trained for it. And so, yeah, I just don't like you. I don't take a whole lot of credence in that. Like, yeah, they're working hard. Like I can't imagine, like, you know, it's the difference between like running a 5K and running a marathon. Like, you know, the training that they have to do, the preparation, like, yeah, the stamina to go for the like a 20-minute match for The Rock to come out, do it after he really hadn't wrestled much. Like, I can't shit on that. Like, you know, that's just ridiculous. So but overall the product was good. I think I gave it a little bit higher because of the build. I think that you like the Punk's long reign, while they weren't necessarily involved with each other that entire time, you knew the match was coming. The Rock announced it. Like, you know, it made sense. Yeah, they could have done something weird where, you know, then they didn't, luckily. You know, I feel like, you know, Money in the Bank, where they could, somebody else wins the contract from the contract holder, which, you know, I think is stupid, but, you know, I'm glad that they didn't do anything like that. We knew it was coming. Didn't need a whole lot of aftermath, you know, because Punk, they were still telling the story with Punk, but we still ended up getting Cena and The Rock, which, you know, that's what that was. And so, yeah, 8 for me, because I think while the in-ring product was good, it was also so much to the build that made it worth it too.
Yep. Cool. Well, this was a fun one, man. It was fun to go back and definitely check it out. If you didn't watch the match with us, at least the ending, this little arc they did with The Rock over these, you know, 3 or 4 months was great. I mean, really in a lot of ways, kind of a multi-year thing when you factor in him reffing and then the Spurs Cena match. And him and Cena had some great promos, man. There was just some great stuff in there. So go back and watch it. This was a fun episode. Jeff, I think this is it.
Yeah. On to the next one, my friend.
On to next week, new episode. Next week is one I am very, very excited about. We are doing Ultimate Warrior, Sergeant Slaughter, Royal Rumble 91. Keep this Royal Rumble theme up. It's that time of year. We're in WrestleMania season. So I'm Tom, that's Jeff, and this is The Payoff.